Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 317 of the podcast. It is Saturday, the 15th of April, 2017, as I record this on a quiet Easter weekend in Bath. So today I have three mini interviews with my co-authors for American Demon Hunter's Sacrifice. Lindsay Barocca, who made seven figures in 2016 from her writing, Jay Thorne, who is the king of collaborations, and Zach Bohannon, who quit his job recently to go full-time as a writer. And these interviews were recorded in New Orleans as we were there. And I ask each of them how they thought the collaboration was going, any lessons learned, as well as what is working for them right now as an indie and what they are excited about. And so some interesting things, whether or not you're interested in co-writing, there's also some great tips. And it is pretty amazing if you think about it. We got on the train and I actually met Jay and Zach for the first time on March 19th, which is pretty much exactly 4 weeks ago. And we started plotting the book on the train. We wrote it that week and then have been editing it in round robins. And I'm actually about to just finish the final pass from proofreaders in a minute, and then we'll be getting the file up. So it's pretty amazing. Four heads can be better than one. And it has been one of those experiences that sometimes during the process, I've been like, this is really hard. but I'm pretty pleased with the story, actually. And the early ARC readers have been very happy. So pretty awesome. And you are going to want to buy the book in launch week, whether or not you want to read the actual story, because there are some incredible bonuses. And I will be talking about that in a minute. Okay, so nothing too interesting in publishing news this week. There's a lot going on in the political and global scene, but we will skip over that. So this week I have been editing the second book in the Sweet Romance series that I'm also co-writing, and definitely a lot more co-writing going on in the indie community these days. And I've decided I'm just going to tell you guys. I've said that this is a family project, but I don't see any reason why I shouldn't just tell you. I'm absolutely a nightmare at keeping secrets, to be honest. I like everything to be transparent. So I'm going to tell you that this is co-writing with my mum. I'm sure many of you guessed that. my mum loves romance. She loves happy endings. She likes things to be lovely. So I'm reining in my need to kill people and helping her with her books. And good on her, because basically I said, probably 2 years ago now, I said, you know, she was like, well, I could write a book. And I'm like, yeah, great. As we all have to encourage our friends and relatives to write books. But I did say to her, look, Mum, I'll help you self-publish a book. That's fine. But if you want to take it seriously, I suggest you write three books. And if you can write three books, I will look at them and maybe we can publish them together. So it was always if I'm going to do this under my own name, under our company imprint, and I'm going to spend time, you know, on multiple books, then it had to be serious. Now, maybe that's hardcore, maybe that's not. I think you all understand that. You know, I want to help her and we want to help our family, but it also needs to be a good business prospect to invest so much time in. So anyway, good on her. She has written three books and she's actually just finishing number four and has been amazingly patient. And so now I'm like, okay, we'll get these out there. So I'm editing and smoothing and taking the writing up a notch, because the stories are hers, but it is very different to be at book number, what am I at, 25 or something, versus book 1 to 3. So I'm editing them, smoothing them out, and we will be publishing them together. And thanks to those people who've emailed me offering to be early readers and reviewers for those books, I am looking for sweet romance readers. So please do email me if that is you, joanna@thecreativepen.com. And so actually it's been quite nice to read these books and edit them and feel like these are going to make people happy. But I am so desperate to get back to writing books where I blow people up.
Maybe that's just me. But, you know, we all have to write the books we love and the things we need to write. So I will be back into that soon. Also, an update on the premium print journal that I talked about before. Had John Lee Dumas on the show back in January talking about his premium journal. And I've been thinking about this for a while now. But this week, I finally got the word on a problem that is going to stop the project, which is that in Britain, VAT, value added tax, which is like sales tax in many countries for specific classes of goods, this print journal would be classed as stationery, not a book. And so because of the amount of overheads in terms of paperwork, it's just not worth it for me right now. So I'm putting that on hold. I will probably do a hardback version of The Successful Author Mindset instead and include lovely pages of quotes in that, because that would fit very well. So that's something I'm thinking about. One interesting thing that has happened since coming back from New Orleans, I've always been more of a binge writer. So, you know, when I write a project, I'll spend a lot more time in that project and sort of shunt everything else to the side. And but in New Orleans, every morning I would get up and go to the cafe and write and put my wonderful Bose noise cancelling headphones on. And to be honest, these are one of the best things I've ever used for my writing life. I basically put them on and can cancel out all the sound around me. So I've been, since I got back from New Orleans, I have been at the cafe every weekday and working for a few hours in the morning. I get through a cup of black coffee an hour and the cafe's fine with that. And it's actually been really interesting because I think this has been a good shift in my writing behavior. I've never up until recently been the sort of write every day type person, but this I think has been a shift in my routine, primarily because of Lindsay actually. Lindsay has written an incredible, I think she's written 50 books in the last couple of years, and she works very hard, but she also works in a sustainable manner in that she walks her dogs for hours every day, she writes, and she doesn't fuss too much about everything else. So yeah, I think talking to her about how she got to 50 books, because I want to get up there. I think you can do a lot when you have that much of a backlist, and she just works consistently on her books and loves writing. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to keeping this routine up. So I hope that gives you some ideas. Okay, so let's talk about American Demon Hunters Sacrifice. And a couple of people have said they enjoy my attempt at reading blurbs. So I'm going to read you the blurb. Are you ready? A relic thief, an ex-military mom, a grief-stricken father willing to do anything to save his son, an American demon hunter. All aboard the 8:05 p.m. from Chicago to New Orleans for 19 hours that would change their lives. When the relic of an ancient blood cult is used to summon the dead and open a portal to the beyond, demons escape onto the train. As the body count rises, each must fight to save their own lives and those of the people they love. New friendships are forged in the battles and love blossoms in the carnage. But who will have to pay the ultimate sacrifice? A dark fantasy from four best-selling authors who just happened to be on the 8:05 p.m. from Chicago one March evening. There you go. And I'm pretty happy with that, actually. And the book it's fun. I mean, if you don't like demon stuff or some death, then maybe not. But I think you're going to want to buy it anyway. So even if you don't want to read the book, you should buy it. So this is what's happening. If you get it in the week of the first launch week between 17th to, let's say, the 25th after the next podcast, then you will also get two extra bonus pages at the back of the book, one for readers and one for writers. Now, the reader's bonus includes four more novels, so one extra bonus novel from each of us, plus a chance to win a first edition print book with a special picture signed by us all. And it really is limited edition because we may never be in the same place again. The writer's bonus page the writer's bonus page includes a copy of the newly updated co-writing book. So Jay and I just updated that with a new chapter and went back through the book and updated it. So that is available. That includes all our advice, and co-writing is becoming much more common in the indie community. So hopefully that might help you if that's something you're interested in. Plus a couple of really awesome giveaways. So there are links within the back of the book. There's a chance to win a 1 hour consultation with the author of your choice. So basically you can enter to win an hour on Skype with me or with Lindsay or Jay or with Zach. And there's also a chance to win a guest spot on Lindsay's science fiction and fantasy marketing podcast, where you can ask her and her co-host anything. So these are some pretty super bonuses. I hope you all agree. I don't even do consulting anymore. So that is a rare thing, and we'll be giving that away within the first week of May. So if you do enter, you will be notified pretty quickly. So head on over to jfpenn.com/sacrifice book, where you can purchase the ebook right now and get all those bonuses. It is only Amazon for this launch period. The rest of Jay's books for the American Demon Hunters series are on KDP Select, and he is the publisher of record for this book. So the book will be wide at some point, but right now it's Amazon only. So go to jfpenn.com/sacrifice book and get all those bonuses. Plus, you can also check out my photo album for the Chicago and New Orleans trip at jfpenn.com/NOLA, N-O-L-A, which, as many people know, is the shorthand for New Orleans. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Thanks especially for all the people who've emailed or tweeted about the International Thriller Writers Award. I am still super thrilled to be a finalist for the Best Ebook Original Award for Destroyer of Worlds. I'll also be getting a certificate in the post soon, so it's actually real. It's not just something that's on the internet. And I've booked all my tickets for New York in July, and Jonathan will be coming, and this will be kind of his first outing as the as spouse into the thriller world. So that'll be interesting, because I've kept my life quite separate up until recently. So we'll see how that goes. Lots of people also tweeted about my interview on Tara Gentile's Profit Power Pursuit podcast, which looks like that went down really well. And hello to any new listeners from that show. Thanks also for all your normal emails and tweets. Jessica Vita said about the interview with Thad last week, "You two were so much fun to listen to. Wish I'd understood half of it." Oh, Jessica, don't you worry about that. What's so funny this week on The Future Book, which is a British blog by the bookseller, they had a post on virtual reality for publishers. And what's hilarious is I wrote an article on Future Book on virtual reality for publishers 2 years ago, and it looks like they finally caught up thinking about it. So really interesting. So if you don't understand a lot of what we talk about, don't worry, because over time things will just drip into your brain and you will eventually get it. Eileen Amosa said, "Break time means on Monday I enjoy a cup of masala tea while listening to the show." Awesome. Hi, Eileen. Jules sent me a lovely picture of the Maui sunset listening to the show sitting on the beach. Anish de Lumiere said, "Listening while doing the grocery shoppings, which makes it more fun." And thanks to Anish this week. She wrote a great article on writing memoir for the blog, which some people have said have really touched them and made them think about their own memoirs, because it is a very common genre that many people want to write. So yes, there are new articles on the every week at thecreativepen.com /blog. So you can go check those out. Candy Sim says, "Listening to the show while the storm abates, Cyclone Cook in New Zealand this week being a rather wet period." So yes, hope you're all okay over there. And thanks to Jenny Gillam, who sent me a picture of reading Risen Gods in front of Big Ben in London. Always awesome to see my books being read in the wild. And finally, Wendy Jones, listening to the show while traveling from Dundee to Stonehaven on the way to present Wendy's Book Buzz Buzz radio show and sent me a picture of herself in a very pro studio, which is a long way from my microphone on a box set up here, which is what I basically have. I have my mic and it's on a box that I've had for years now, just a cardboard box, nothing special. But hey, we all do our shows in different ways. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by everyone supporting the show on Patreon. You guys make it possible for the podcast to continue, and I really appreciate everyone's support. And of course, I do the monthly extra audio for those supporters on Patreon. The corporate sponsorship from Kobo Writing Life pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a huge thank you to all of you supporting the show. Thanks to new patrons this week, Johanna Squire, Lauren B. Harris, Mark Llewellyn, Rebecca Adams, and Baron Frosty, which is cool. I really appreciate your support. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And you can support the show with even just a couple of coffees a month, which will keep me in writing coffee. And you'll get that extra monthly Q&A audio, which is still usually between 30 and 45 minutes of extra Q&A of me answering questions. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get into the interviews. So who are you and what do you write?
Hi, I'm Lindsay Baroker and I write fantasy and science fiction, usually set in other worlds. I like to make up my own stuff, usually a little romance, a little adventure. I think they're fun books.
Yeah, and a sense of humor.
Yes, I like to include that in everything, even dark fantasy.
Dark fantasy. So we're here in New Orleans and we've been writing a book this week. So what made you decide to join this mad collaboration in the first place?
Well, I was actually sold on the idea of the trip, probably more than the collaboration. I thought, well, I've never done it before, so I'm pretty inexperienced with that. But Jay Thorne, who I assume we already talked to, we're talking to you soon, you know, he emailed me and said, hey, we're going to fly to Chicago, take an overnight train to New Orleans, and then hang out there and write this novel, which I think may be turning into a novella. But it's a great city. We've been a little distracted. But so that was it for me. I just I thought it really sounded like a fun adventure. These were things I hadn't done before. And also another thing was that we weren't going to be taking a month or 2 months to do the project. If anybody's read my stuff, they see I publish fairly often. So I didn't want a big time commitment. And the week thing sounded fun, almost like a vacation.
Yeah, exactly. And what have been the bumps along the way? What have been the challenges, let's say, of this collaboration?
Aside from the fact that there's so much to see tourist-wise that I've had a little struggle to keep up with my words, it's been a lot of fun. But I think in the beginning, as you know, you mentioned, Johanna, that you're more of a discovery writer. And I was like, what do you mean we're not going to have an outline? And I think it was okay. We talked about it in the beginning and I knew like the first scene I was going to write. But then I had to get to the point where everybody else had caught up. And so I could know what to write next. And I think we were only about a day into the actual writing or so when I grabbed the guys and said, hey, Johanna, do you mind if we do an outline? And you were cool that you just said, like, yeah, I'm going to bed because Johanna's on the UK time, of course. And so we did an outline. And after that, I got a lot more relaxed. I knew exactly what I had to write for my character for the rest of the story. So it's been good to learn how other people work. And I think if I did another collaboration in the future, I'd probably try to steamroll over Joanne and say, we need an outline from day one. But, and I'm fine with outlines being flexible and people doing their own things. But I think when you're doing this sort of thing, it's especially with four people, it's super helpful if you know kind of where your character needs to be at different points in the story. And then if you want to sacrifice a small child randomly along the side.
I can't help it. These things just happen.
I understand that. It happens a lot in dark fantasy. but that was probably the hurdle for me. And once we did do that outline, I've been a lot more comfortable since then.
And we should say, like, we recorded your podcast that night and then you guys did the outline afterwards. So I feel like things have changed through the week. You know, like I feel like the original starting off idea was mine out of my research with the skull and everything. And then you guys, you know, kind of took over a bit later on. So, you know, I feel like every day things have changed. Have you sensed that, like, over the week, things have changed in terms of how we've been working. Like maybe if it was longer, you might have like settled into the process, because we're pretty much done and, you know.
Yeah, now that we're almost done, I'm pretty cool with everything. No, but it was definitely, you had gone to that museum ahead of time and brought these ideas. Because one of the things, you know, maybe Zach mentioned it already, but we weren't going to plan the story ahead of time. And I think that was fun. It led it to some spontaneity. And then you showed up with this Peruvian skull that you had pictures of. And I liked it. You know, I had an idea. I thought it was going to be demons on the train, kind of overnight adventure, all wrapped up in 24 hours to begin with, which apparently not everybody had that same idea, but that's what I was imagining. So what you brought to it really fit with what I thought we would do. And you seemed to be more in charge in the beginning because you had your ideas and then you were just like, I know enough. I can write the story now. And I wasn't quite there yet. So, and then you seem more almost done. I think you finished earlier. So, because you had those extra hours in the morning with your UK time zone. I went in reverse. So I lost hours. So every morning I would wake up, I'm like, oh man, they've already posted a bunch of stuff. I'm way behind. But it has changed. And I imagine if we did it again with the same group of people, it'd be a lot smoother, because now we know what we all, our preferences and needs are. But I think overall, I'm almost a little surprised. I think we're going to end up with a cohesive story.
You're surprised?
You know, early on, I was like, oh, this is just not going to work.
It definitely did feel like that at times. There was this kind of like, oh, this is, you know, this is going to be the train wreck.
Yeah, we were talking about a train wreck for the story and then a train wreck of the story. There were multiple meanings of the
and whether wreck. Whether it would work. So if you, I mean, and you know, you haven't collaborated before, right?
Right.
Yeah. So what are the positives that you've seen? Like those are some of the challenges, but what are the positives that you found from doing it this week?
Look at all the cool people and things I've done in New Orleans. I feel like it's sort of like you have a career and you always have to continue to try to grow as a writer. Maybe even though you have a lot of books out and you've been doing pretty well, it's good to keep pushing yourself and try different things. And as a natural introvert, to do something with other people has been interesting and a learning experience, as cheesy as that sounds. You know, and I know other people don't write the same way I do, and I've always known that, but it's been a kind of a growth experience. I'm all about the cheesy words today, to just kind of try to work with others with different styles and really that write in different genres and try to bring it all together. So, and I think this will be something I remember always, even though I have a horrible memory, which I've admitted, but we've done enough unique things and the whole experience has been very unique that, you know, it was a challenging first collaboration, but probably a lot more fun than just uploading documents into Dropbox from across the world with another author. So
yeah, we had a bonding experience yesterday, didn't we? We went to the Museum of Death. How was that for you?
Oh, I was fine with it. Everything but the movies that were playing with the brains being whatever they were
dissected.
Doing. Yeah, pictures I'm not too weirded out by. I mean, I probably don't study them too closely, but it was a lot of photographs of crime scenes
and serial killers.
Serial killer victims. So that's what you get in America if you go to a death museum. So it was all right. I probably wouldn't go again.
No, I think, New Orleans has been really interesting. And like you, this was the reason I came, you know, but hanging out. In fact, I was saying to my husband, you know, for a load of introverts, we've managed to do quite a few sort of sociable things together, which has been a surprise for me because it's not something I actually do back in my home country.
Yeah, I have I mentioned to you two other writers that we came up through the same workshop together, and every year we get together and do a trip. But it's not really a trip. It's like we go to a cabin in the woods, or we went to Sedona, and we're mostly just writing. We tend to do, like, depending on what we're each working on, 5,000 to 10,000 words a day. And we're not collaborating. We're just hanging out together and, you know, chatting with each other and going out to dinner. But this has been much more of an adventure with all the touring we've done, and we're going on a bayou tour later this afternoon.
An airboat.
Yes, someone might get eaten by an alligator, but we've already got the contract signed, I think.
No, we haven't, not quite yet.
Oh no, we better get that done before 2:45.
That is true. So is there anything you would do differently? Like you said, if you were running your own collaboration, you would have an outline. you know, one of the challenges I found as well was the main sort of the maintenance of our own voices, because like we noted, you and I have very different voices. Zach and Jay have quite similar voices in a way. You know, how have you felt about sort of maintaining your own voice in this type of collaboration?
I feel like it's working pretty well the way we set it up, because we have four different point of view characters. And so we're each able to write our character through that character's eyes. And it actually makes a lot of sense that they would have very different voices as different people. It's a little challenging. Something we're going to have to address in the edits is when our characters interact with each other. And, you know, you kind of look at the dialogue other people wrote for you and like, oh, please, what is that? So we'll have to change, you know, and I think we're all being flexible about that. Nobody's saying like, oh, no, you can't touch my work or change what my character said. So that's been a bit of, you know, I would say not too much of a challenge because of the way we set it up. I think it would actually be harder. You mentioned that you'd worked with Jay in the past and kind of tried to blend it to a cohesive style, so people reading couldn't necessarily tell which person had been writing it. I'm sure in this one they will be able to tell, but I think it works with the project. So I think it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I wanted to ask you, you know, you're well known in the author community for being a, you know, fast writer and putting out a lot of books. And last year you did very well, you know, with your books. So what would you recommend if people want the kind of, you know, financial success and sales success? What are your tips for getting there?
Yeah, it's kind of a tough time right now. I actually did a blog post I mentioned off the air. That I was noticing, you know, because a lot of people, if you read the indie community on K-boards and stuff, there's a lot of doom and gloom. And I'm pessimistic too. I always think this could go away anytime. But, you know, there are still people succeeding that are just getting started. Like this last year, we've seen some people that go from nothing to well into six figures. And the common theme with those people was that they were writing and publishing really quickly. Not everybody is going to be able to do that. I understand. I always tell people it took me 7 years to finish my first novel. There were some World of Warcraft interruptions and gaming addictions during that time. But the first few novels especially are really just a learning experience. And you do need, I think you need to take more time and maybe belong to a workshop or just have some, find some trusted fellow authors that are maybe in a similar position to you or a little bit ahead of you that can offer feedback. Or if you like to take classes or go to conferences, there's always stuff at the different cons. And then once you've written a few novels, you kind of get more of a feel. I mean, you know yourself, I think. I've definitely listened to your podcast and it seemed like it kind of took a long time early on. And now you're getting more novels out more quickly. It becomes more of a process and you find out what works for you. I did not outline in the beginning. I just was like, oh, I kind of, if I knew how it ended, I could get them there. But I started outlining and that really helped me not have to delete scenes and rewrite huge things. So it just became a faster process. But for those who are starting now that are not huge fast writers or slender fast writers, whatever. you know, I think it's good to kind of get involved with the community. There are some conferences now that indie authors are putting on or organizations for indie authors you can go to and meet some other writers, kind of get to know people that are writing in the same genre as you. You'll often find that if you can put together a group of people, like some of the people we were chatting with on our in New Orleans, they've got this group of people that I think it's going to be really great for their career. They're all kind of in a starting out or just a little past that. And then you grow together and you can help each other promote your stuff if it makes sense to do that. It is, and it's hard for me to say that networking is important. I actually didn't do any the first few years. I mean, I feel like you can still make it if you're just solo and consistently put out books. They don't have to be every month. I think I maybe did three the first year I published. And I just, I would say to you, pay attention to all the podcasts. And you know, maybe K-boards too. I'm not a big fan of forums as far as posting there. Like I think I've been lurking on K-boards for 6 years and I've got like 200 posts in that time. But it's good to know what's going on, especially with the marketing, because it changes what's working with Amazon. You know, there've been several kind of gimmicks that people have exploited over the years. Just, I remember it used to be like, if you had a book free, if you were in KDP Select and then it came back from a day free, it would still be selling as if all those downloads had been sales. So that was one thing that's gone, been gone for years. But there have been things like that. For right now, as we're recording in 2017, just launching into KDP Select and being Kindle Unlimited can help a lot. Because, you know, as of this month, who knows what it'll be next month, all those borrows count as good as sales as far as the algorithms or the figuring the sales ranking and whether you're going to be in a top 100 for your category. I would say that if you're doing your first book, it wouldn't hurt to hold back and have a couple things ready that you can launch right now at the same time.
Everyone hates that piece of advice.
I know. They're like, I wrote a prequel. It's 10,000 words, or it's just someone on keyboards, and I'm working on book one. What should I do right now? I'm like, well, finish book one and then use your prequel to give as a giveaway to get people to sign up for your mailing list. And it is tough. I know I think in series, so I would have been okay with that advice. But it did take a long time for those first couple novels. So I do understand why people are like, oh my gosh, I don't want to wait to publish. But so even if you don't write quickly, by holding back and maybe waiting till you have two novels and a prequel or three novels, and they don't have to be long, giant novels unless you're an epic fantasy person. And then you're just out of luck. You made that choice. I understand. I was telling the guys I've done 200,000 word novels. So.
Yeah, which is pretty amazing. So, I mean, you know, all the stuff you said there, is the secret that there really is no secret?
I honestly just think the biggest secret is to be consistent. You know, we were talking about how James Patterson and Stephen King and these guys are such household names now, but they started writing in like the 70s and 80s and have consistently been putting out books every year or maybe more than, you know, some of these guys that have started more recently with traditional publishing too. In fantasy, we have Kevin Hearn. He kind of came out of nowhere, but he had written like 5 books, I think, in advance when he sold them, or either that or was just writing them really quickly. And so the Iron Druid books took off really quickly for him. And I feel like if you can publish quickly now, it's definitely an advantage. What was the question?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, the secret is there is no secret.
Consistency.
And, yeah, consistency, yeah, and also answer. Publishing often. So you put out 12 books last year, right? 12 novels.
Between my pen name and my regular name, yeah. But I don't think you have to publish that often. But if you publish 2 a year, you know, put it out in whatever your day, May and November or whatever you're going to launch, and people come to expect it. And it's just that it's going to take longer if you don't publish as quickly. It's not that you can't still get there.
Yeah.
Like we've seen people who's taken 30 years to build up their career and now they're New York Times bestsellers and now their books sell really well. But they wrote a lot of books before they've gathered their fan base. And so it's like you can do it. You can fast track it if you write really quickly. But just because you don't doesn't mean you can't gather. But you can't be just thinking, oh, I have one novel. This is the one that's going to make me rich from, you know, and maybe that'll happen every now and then. Lightning strikes. But if you just go toward it, like I'm going to have to. Gradually, each book I publish, I'm going to hope to get a few more readers on my mailing list, a few more people who are excited to read my books. And if you don't have these unrealistic expectations, then everything is like a win. You know, I remember I just wanted to sell a few books. I did have the goal of maybe this could be the day job because I'd read J.A. Conrath's post about, oh, I made $100,000 this month with these books. And I was like, well, maybe if I just wrote some of that number of books, I could have that kind of, you know, maybe... I wasn't even thinking that successful that at that point, but now I know it's very possible, especially in KU. A lot of people are just killing it right now with the way things are today in April 2017 as we record this. Who knows what it'll be later. So just, yeah, consistency.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And did you ever have, you know, like one still for some reason people have this issue with if you write fast, it's a crappier book. You know, did you have to go through that psychological shift at some point? Like you said, it took you 7 years to do the first one. How did you get from that to, you know, one in a month?
Yeah, I think it was actually the opposite from the beginning. I just thought, because I knew when it took so long, I'd have to go back and reread everything I'd written before. And it was just a very slow process. And I remember rewriting the ending because I hated the ending. And it's like the more time you have to tinker with stuff, you know, there's advice, oh, you should put it in your, you know, book, what do we call that, nightstand for, you know, 6 months before you go back and edit it. But for me, I feel like if I write quickly, the story is just playing in my head like a movie. And I haven't forgotten what happened. I don't have to go back and read what happened in the first few chapters when I get to the end. And it's just, it's so much more efficient. I just love it. Now, even if I slowed down like my production schedule, which maybe someday I will, I would probably still write a first draft in 2 or 3 weeks and then edit it almost right away while I'm still thinking, remembering what I wanted to change. And then maybe I'd take some time off and travel between the book launches or something. But I love writing fast, and I don't believe that at all. Just from my own experience, I believe it's much better when you get it down quickly and everything's in your head. And the longer it takes, the more times you go over it. I found with my own stuff that my voice is most natural and fluid when I'm just writing straight through. When I go back and edit it, sometimes, you know how it is, sometimes you no matter how well you outline, you might have to insert a few things here or there. And it just doesn't seem, it seems like you're kind of jackhammering it in from the side, you know, or it's not, hopefully I'm the only one that thinks, oh, well, that section wasn't as smooth. But I think the closest I can get to just writing it in one, not one sitting, I'm not that guy that does 50K in 24 hours, but the faster I can get it out, the smoother it's going to be, the more true to my voice.
No, that's cool. Yeah. So it's really interesting hearing you talk about sort of coming from where you were and where you are now. And, you know, looking forward, what are you excited about in terms of the indie community and where we're going?
I think it's exciting that we're starting to get a little more street cred. You're seeing some really talented books come out of indie publishing. Of course, there are still the books that people did not edit and just put up there. But, you know, in the, back in 2010, when you had your Kindle, there was a lot of that with really horrible covers. And but even then they sold because people were just hungry for something for their Kindles. Now we have to be better. Most traditional publishers are even getting their older backlist out in ebook. So there's more competition out there and it's forced us to raise our game, especially those who are really serious about it and want to make a career of it. I'm super excited that so many people now are able to make a living as indie authors.
That no one's heard of, really.
Yeah. I mean, how many people you run into these conferences that are making six figures? And I'm like, I've never heard of them. You know, I kind of know the people in my genre. I see, you know, because I look at the list and see which books and authors are doing well. But outside of that, it's amazing how many people can have that kind of success in little niches too, in niches that traditional publishing just, they don't touch because they don't think they're going to sell enough books to make a profit, which is true because the way they do it, they really, like for us, if you sell 10,000 books, that's pretty good. You know, if you're selling for $4 or $5, that's what, 25,000 in your pocket or something. And maybe that's excellent for a book. But for traditional publishing, it's like anything under 100,000 books. Oh, that's a failure. That author's probably not going to, we're not even going to sign them for any more books. So it's, I hope it stays that way and that more people are able to continue to, if they want to, make a living as a writer. It's really cool. How many artists get to, you know, the struggling artist thing is not a myth.
But yeah, we're able to kind of bust out of that, you know, and like you said, there are so many people who are making decent money, and that might be, you know, decent money might be 50 grand. It doesn't need to be six figures, like for many people. But what's interesting, I think, in terms of people not hearing about them, like you have a podcast, I have a podcast, Jay has a podcast. So people have heard our names in other context, right? But you don't need a podcast, do you? Like, you didn't start your podcast as a, hey, I've got to sell more books through that way. So just tell people a little bit about your podcast, why you started it, and who it's useful for.
Right. We've got the Science Fiction and Fantasy Marketing Podcast. We deliberately went very niche because by that time there was the self-publishing podcast and several just kind of broad that we're doing. And I have zero interest in teaching writing. So, but I am interested in interviewing people who are doing interesting things with the marketing. So that's why I kind of picked it and found the guys and steamrolled them in. Okay, you could be the tech guy and then we'll just have people on. But it's been great because we've been able to kind of, I just go, you know, some people I know, but some people I don't know. And some listener will recommend, hey, check out this guy. And there's somebody you've never heard of that's probably doing 10,000 a month or 5,000 a month. And like you said, depending on where you live, you may not need a, you know, I think there was just somebody on Keywords that was saying, I just need 5,000 a year to supplement my income and I can live. So I love that we've highlighted a mix of people. We've had some super successful people. And with the theme of our podcast, we don't have to stick to indie. We've had some traditional published authors and some of those people are now kind of going hybrid and doing some novellas on the side. I think word has gotten out. Yeah. You can make a lot more. Especially, that's like the best career ever, I think, is to have had traditional publishing help build your name. And then if, you know, if your contract works and you can slide a few novellas or novels on the side, that's a great deal for them. But so it has been nice that we don't have to just stick to indie publishing, because I think it's useful to learn too. Because some of these traditional published authors, you interview them and it sounds like they got lucky, you know, or they've done things like a few book signings and I know that's not selling any books, but others of them are really into it and have a mailing list and are doing everything they can to make sure they're successful. They're not just relying on the traditional publishers.
Cool. So where can people find you and your books and also the podcast online?
All right. I'm at lindsaybaroker.com. And if you get even close to spelling that, you'll probably find my page. I think I'm the only one out there. And then we have the MarketingSFF.com is the name, is the URL for the podcast, which I did not choose. And the person who chose it only stayed for the first five shows. So got to fight for your URLs. But and you can find me on Amazon. I'm also in the other stores. My sci-fi stuff is just on Amazon. I'm experimenting with Kindle Unlimited for the reasons we've talked about. But I do have stuff in Kobo and Google Play and Barnes & Noble. They're still around, I believe.
As of April 2017.
I still sell books there. I have Nook people, so that's great. So I'm anywhere if you want to check me out.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time, Lindsay.
All right. Thanks for having me.
So who are you and what do you write?
I'm Zach Bohannon from Nashville, Tennessee. And I write horror and post-apocalyptic horror science fiction. And I also write fantasy, but that's under an undisclosed pen name.
Ah, undisclosed.
For now.
For now.
Yeah.
So we're here in New Orleans. So what made you decide to do this collaboration in the first place?
So when Jay brought this idea to me, I mean, it was, I didn't have to think about it too long. It was kind of a no, it just seemed like too good of an opportunity, you know, to be able to, you know, travel with four writers or three other writers and, you know, have this joint experience together. It was just something I couldn't turn down. And for me, like, as cool as it is that at the end of this week that, you know, we're going to have a book, we're going to publish stuff, like, that's really neat. For me, it's been more about, like, the friendships I've built with you guys over this week and, you know, just, you know, learning from each other and all that. I think that that's, and just, again, having this joint experience, I just think it's so unique and it's so cool. And I didn't want to miss out on that.
Mm. And how does this compare to the previous co-writing projects you've done?
Very different. you know, just having a, just the way we naturally did this. And I love how we did it. You know, we're going to come in and we're going to write a book in a week, you know, pretty much. And, it's definitely different, you know, working with four people as opposed to two, you're obviously going to hit some bumps and stuff, but I think we've all been really professional and there hasn't been that many bumps. It's been probably less than I thought there was going to be, honestly. But yeah, it's just the time frame that we have has kind of been what's really made it crazy more than anything. So it doesn't really compare to any other collaborations I've done for sure. So
to be more specific about some of the bumps, like what have been the challenges for you personally?
Well, like, yeah, I think just from the story aspect, like, you know, I go on to write a scene and just trying to, you know, I got to know where all the other characters are, you know, in the train and stuff. And so that's been a little bit of a challenge. And then, you know, where the other, you make sure that none of you guys have written my character somewhere else. I mean, obviously it's all stuff that can be edited out later, but you know, I don't really like wasting words. So I want to kind of be prepared going in and that's been a little difficult at times, but again, we've made it all work and it's gone really well. So,
And what would you do differently next time? If you were to do another four person collaboration, how would you do it differently?
I think the big thing I would do different is I think that maybe I would go in a little more with like some kind of a loose outline or something, just so we kind of like with this, you know, we already kind of had the world built and stuff and we wanted the outline and plotting to be, that was part of the experience. And I like that we did that, but I think next time I would maybe go in with at least a little more, like even if we, and I know we talked about doing this, but, and we, I guess we did do this. Like when we had our characters built and stuff, but maybe like, you know, we had that, we really talked about that, had a meeting. We had a meeting beforehand, you know, where we talked about our characters and kind of their arc and stuff. I think that, you know, alone, like those types of things would help a little bit. But yeah, that would be pretty much it, honestly.
And so those are some of the challenges. But what are the positives that you see with co-writing? Like how has it helped you on this project and your previous projects in terms of your writing career?
Well, I mean, as far as this project, I mean, you know, we write a book in a week. I mean, that's pretty fast to get a product, you know, a book done. And it's, you know, it wouldn't be impossible by myself, but like, it kind of would be like, I don't think I could write this much in a week. So, and then, yeah, as far as this project, I mean, you know, there's that. And then there's the other things outside the book I mentioned about us, you know, just being here. But as far as other co-writing projects, kind of what I really like about them. So I use my stuff with Jay for an example, because that's who I co-author with the most. Is, you know, we have opposite strengths and weaknesses and opposite likes and dislikes of what we like to do in the process of writing a book. So for example, Jay loves doing revisions, but he doesn't really like first drafting. Well, I'm the opposite. I love first drafting, but like, if I get too bogged down doing revisions over a long period of time, like I don't like doing that. He also is a better pre-planner. Like I love outline and stuff and story and world building, but he's better at it than I am. And so that helps too. Like, so, you know, he will plan the book. I write the book. I'll usually do like a real quick glance over just to give him a little less work. And then he likes getting bogged down and like coming in fresh and then doing the revisions from there. So that really works for us. And that way, you know, especially once we really get our process going, it's going to make the whole process of writing a series of books so much easier, because he can have the outline done so I can go straight into the next book while he's doing revisions on the other one. So those are some definite advantages. If you can find a partner like that who has opposite strengths to your weaknesses, I mean, that's a huge advantage to co-writing.
Mm. Although I've noticed, I like your voice and Jay's voice are pretty similar. My voice is very different to you guys, and Lindsay's voice is completely different again. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's quite a difficult thing. I mean, I can see how you and Jay could write one book together more easily. So how have you felt about the differences between everybody's voice in terms of making a coherent story?
It's definitely a little bit of a challenge, but that's part of what makes this project unique. I mean, we brought, like you said, I think Jay and I are definitely the closest in voice for sure. But the uniqueness of everyone's voice is part of what makes this project so cool to me, you know? I think we kind of knew that going in and stuff. It's been a little difficult, and it may be a little weird during the editing process, but I think it adds character to the book.
Hopefully. Yeah, character for sure. And in terms of personality of the writer, what type of personality do you think co-writing works for the best? Like, are there certain types of people that co-writing regularly works for?
I gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I don't know necessarily. Like, I really think this is something anyone can do. I mean, you know, it's a relationship, just like you would have with, you know, a significant other, a spouse or a friend or whatever. Or a business partner. It's just a relationship, and you have to, I do think it's important to find someone or some people that you mesh with, you know, like going back to Jay, like Jay and I have a lot, you know, we're good friends. We have a lot in common. So we read the same stuff. We listen to the same music. There's a lot of similarities there. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's just like any other relationship. You just, you know, you don't force yourself to find the right person. Just, it'll happen organically the more you network with other authors and stuff. And, you know, you'll eventually, if you're interested in co-authoring, I'm sure you'll come across somebody eventually, you know, but it just has to happen organically and just be someone that you mesh with. So.
Mm. Because in terms of your copyright and your relationship basically goes on after death.
Absolutely.
It's more serious than a marriage.
Yeah, I think I was going to say, you always say that.
Which is hardcore. Okay, so tell us about your best-selling series, you know, under your own name, and what's working for marketing that right now.
Yeah, so my best-selling series is a post-apocalyptic zombie series called Empty Bodies. I was one of the fortunate people that I had a first book take off and do really well. I guess it's fortunate. At the same time, it has its hindrances, but it stuck with the algorithms really well. So that series, I'm in a little bit different position with that series now, because that series is done. So that series is a 6-book series, which puts me in a really good position where I have an entire series to market. So, you know, I use a combination of box sets has been my main thing. I have the series split into two box sets. I'm getting the last three books done in audio right now. So I already have an audio book for the first three books bundled up. I'm going to do it with the second three. The audio box set does great. But yeah, like Amazon ads have worked really well for me as far as marketing. Since they offered it to everybody and took it out of just KU, it's gotten a little bit more difficult. it was a little easier to get good cost per click when it was just KDP in there. But those still work really well. You know, Facebook ads obviously work really well. I use Facebook ads to push people through that first book by offering it for free, get them on my mailings. You know, a lot of the tried and true stuff, you know, has been working really well for me. But it's really nice to be in that position to have a finished series and then, you know, having a new series coming out soon that's in the similar genre. It's going to be nice to see if that, you know, kind of gives my old series a boost as well. So,
And then looking back, I mean, like you say, we've made some mistakes in inverted commas this week, you know, as we've been working out a new process. What are the mistakes that you've learned from in your indie career? You know, as you look back and go, yeah, that was an interesting one. Like for me, it would have been doing my own covers right at the beginning. I mean, that's just like, don't do that. you know, is there any sort of big lessons you've learned that has helped you?
I think as far as stuff like that goes, like I've had a couple of mistakes that were just like dumb things, but like as far as stuff that's like maybe more of like a strategic mistake, I think the biggest one was I got really, and this kind of goes back to a hindrance of my first book taking off, is that I don't think I really understood how well my book was doing. Like I don't think, and when this rank started to slip after a few months, I got a little bit greedy and I was like, oh man, my rank is slipping. Like, you know, and I think the biggest mistake I did, I had three books out in that series. And I decided to take the first book perma-free when the first book still had a good sales ranking, had really good also bots. I took it perma-free. I left the other books in KU, which is something I don't think you should do when you're in KU. You should keep your whole, either be all in or be out. Don't do the first book perma-free and have your other books in KU, because KU readers aren't looking for perma-free books. They're looking for KU books. I took it out, and then my book, you know, it did really well free, but I lost a bunch of also bots. I messed up the algorithms. And then when I realized that, it was too late. And when I went back in and made it on sale again, I mean, my rank never got back up. I mean, I was like, you know, top 2000 after months, you know, which is pretty good sales rank, you know, especially for a first book, you know, to hang around that 1200 to 2000 range is really good. That's moving a lot of books. So yeah, that would definitely be my biggest mistake. So just like, you know, think through things. Don't get overwhelmed when you listen to podcasts and you hear strategies work for other people and then you feel like you have to chase rabbits and do all those things. Just think about it, be strategic, and you're going to mess up along the way. You're going to, and that's part of the process and that's part of learning to be an entrepreneur and run this business.
So. Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, what excites you most about the indie author movement, as I now think it really is?
Yeah, I think what most excites me, honestly, so I spent the majority of my 20s playing in heavy metal bands and trying to, you know, I didn't go to college. Instead of going to college, I went on tour. Like, that's what my parents didn't like it, but that's what I wanted to do. So, and at the time, you know, this whole idea of being an independent artist was extremely young. I mean, like, it was amazing for us to be able to put our music on MySpace and have people come to it, you know? So this was like 2000, I mean, this was 2004, 2005, 2006, around that time. And at the time, all that stuff was still young, that we still needed to chase after trying to get signed to a record label. And the reason for that, yeah, we could, you know, we could go and spend a bunch of money and get our CDs made, but you know, we needed a label to help us with like booking tours, to get on decent tours, so we didn't have to book all of ourselves and we'd have some financial support. All that's gone now. Like, because of where the digital distribution has gone, being an independent artist, it's an achievable dream now. And And the fact that I don't have to, like, I don't have to worry about having a publisher, and I can just put my books up and I can make a living and I can support my family, that's pretty amazing. And to me it's only going up from here. And you know, independent artists are getting smarter. And it's just, everything just keeps innovating. And, you know, I see a really bright future for this space, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon. So.
Fantastic. So, where can people find you and your books online?
Yeah. So, everything kind of falls through my main website, which is just zachbohannon.com. And you'll find my social media and everything there. I'm usually most active on Facebook, and I do some lots of on Instagram too, but mainly Facebook. So, zachbohannon.com. You can find everything on there.
Thanks so much, Zach.
Awesome. Thank you, Joanna. I appreciate it.
So, who are you and what do you write?
I'm Jay Thorne. I write horror, dark fantasy, post-apocalyptic genre fiction.
And what is this crazy thing we've been doing this week?
We've been doing a four-author collaboration in my American Demon Hunters world, which in New Orleans, in 5 days. It's a little crazy.
And where did you get the idea for this, and why did you want to do this in the first place?
Honestly, the idea came as a bit of a joke. I was on an Amtrak trip and I was doing a lot of writing and I was tweeting about it. And I think Lindsay may have responded, and I made a joke and said, oh, well, we should write something together. And that's honestly where the idea came from. I collaborate a lot, and I'm always looking for new and different ways because I like a challenge. So I do some things the same way, but I like to try and up my game, so to speak, and just try something different and really push myself.
So how has this week pushed you then? How has this week taken your collaboration experience forward?
It's been the most invigorating and yet challenging collaboration I've ever done. And I would do it again in a heartbeat. I think what's really challenging for me personally is that it takes place in one of the worlds I've created. So I'm sort of like the kid who invites everyone over for a play date, and I know what game I want to play, but I can't force it upon people because they're my guests. So I've been trying to walk a fine line between giving input, but not sort of bowling people over with what I think it should be because it's my world. So that's personally been a challenge for me. And I think just the compressed time frame and the logistical pieces of it and the time element. I mean, I don't think we've talked too much about this, but we've been working a lot on this week between the reading and the writing and the story meetings, and it hasn't just been a vacation.
I think I've had more of a vacation than you have. Like, I've been going around doing a lot of stuff. But why did you pick New Orleans? Because, I mean, actually, we ended up doing the story on the train, right?
That's correct. There's something magical about train travel. I really believe that. It's romantic. I think it's a people.
Those sleeper cars are not romantic, Jay.
No. Romantic in the sense of the history of travel, not in like lovey romantic or, like people have this, and maybe it's an American thing, but we have this fascination with, the West, and the West was rail travel. And there's something, there's something to that, I think. And having, and being on a train, there isn't much else you can do. And I've written on a train before. I've taken trips from Chicago to California back multiple times. And for this one, I thought that the destination really mattered. And I had been to New Orleans a few times. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. And it just seemed like a good match. And we hadn't decided whether the story was going to be placed or set on the train or in a city. But having that as the destination seemed like a really cool thing to do.
Mm. So were there any other, maybe just elaborate more on some of the bumps in the road as such that we've had and how they've been overcome, because I think it's changed during the week. Like, there were challenges at the beginning, and then there have been different challenges later on in the week.
There's four of us, so we're all going to have our own perspectives on it. The challenges I think we've faced were ones that we had to, like, if there weren't sort of any if there wasn't creative tension, then I don't think we'd be doing it properly. So I think, you know, there were questions around the cover and sort of, and, you know, we had to go for sort of a second, you know, a second look at the cover.
It's a great cover now.
It is. It's great. And Keelan always does great work. But, you know, we weren't quite sure what we wanted on the first pass. So it wasn't anything that he did or didn't do. It was just the creative process. And it's messy. And there are moments where it's really smooth and moments where it's hard. I know personally for me, one of my challenges is the time element. And so I don't always read as carefully as I should because I'm worried about like getting the words in. And so that caused me to overwrite a few things that wound up getting cut. And that's okay. And I think too, there's a human element to it. I felt like, you know, Tuesday night was sort of the low point and that we were all exhausted and it was late. And like, I think that was the moment where the end seems so far away. Like you have the excitement in the beginning and then you hit that middle point where it just it feels hard. And then we kind of got past that.
And I went to bed and left you guys to it.
Well, I mean, I think that was a moment and that was totally fine. And that was a moment where I felt like, okay, I need to write something down because if I can't keep this all in my head and I don't want to make that mistake again. So again, like it all had to happen. Like I think that was just part of the process.
Mm. And how does this compare to other collaborations that you've done? I mean, you've done a whole lot now.
Mm. Yeah, definitely the most challenging, but also the most rewarding because this is happening in real time. And in a way that, I mean, there's always deadlines, but in this circumstance, we knew going in, we have these many days and we have these many minutes together. So there's certain things that we have to do. Whereas if you're doing a collaboration asynchronously and you don't have a definitive deadline, you have the luxury of stretching things out, rethinking them. This one's intense, like, and we designed it that way and we wanted it that way. But I also recognize that it's intense.
Mm. I mean, for me, the accountability of having only a limited time, like you guys are leaving as we're recording this on the Friday, you guys are leaving tomorrow on the Saturday. I'm staying till Monday, but, you know, we're pretty much done now. So we have this hard deadline of you guys leaving and that accountability of getting words done. I mean, what's so funny is I was really worried coming into this that because especially with Lindsay, I know who writes so many words. I was so paranoid that I would be behind this week. Whereas actually I've ended up being ahead most of the week because right. I got up earlier. But it's you know, what fears did you bring into this that may have turned out unfounded?
Oh, that's a great question. I knew all of you. I don't know Lindsay as well as I know you and Zach, but we've known each other for years. You and I have worked together. We wrote a novel together.
Risen Gods for anyone.
Ding, ding. And Zach and I have worked together on a few things as well. So I honestly, maybe I was being naive, but I didn't really have any sort of major, like I was not fearful that it would fall apart. Like I knew there would be moments where we would be tired or moments where we would have creative differences, but I never thought like, wow, we could come home and have nothing. Like that just wasn't even part of it for me.
Yeah. Cause I never had that fear too. Like we're all professionals, you know, even mm-hmm. if we would have managed a short story or four short stories in one thing, we would have delivered something.
Correct.
But yeah, I agree with you on that. It is an interesting sort of thing. So if you did another four person collaboration, not with the same people, let's just assume you're now going to do another four person, what would you do differently? How would you make it easier next time?
Yes. I've been thinking about that all week and I've been writing down notes because when you're in the experience, that's the best time to be reflective for whatever anyone's doing, any sort of creative work. And so I've been sort of taking some notes and I was looking through them this morning and there were two things that sort of stuck out for me. The first one is doing this again, I would probably give it a genre theme. I think if you were very specific on what the genre was and all those writers were already writing in it and they knew the conventions, I feel like it would be a much more streamlined process. The second thing I would do is I would do more groundwork beforehand. And again, we made the decision not to. Like we explicitly said, we're not even going to talk about this till we get on the train. And that was great. And I think that was exciting. And that put a pressure on us that I think was good. But doing it again, I would probably do more upfront work so that whenever we arrived or whenever it was time to do the first writing session, we could sort of hit the ground running.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I was uncomfortable with that so much so that I went and did research and brought an idea to the table. And then we did get going quicker. And, you know, I did feel at the beginning, oh, you know, I've been, and we actually, what was funny is we recorded Lindsay's podcast earlier in the week, and I was the bossy one up to that point. But then what was so funny is that in that very night, I went, okay, you guys do the rest.
Right.
So it's like, you know, we did throw the ball around in terms of the ideas, you know, the skull from the museum was just the first idea. But I think those are two good things. So when you're like, were people listening interested in collaboration, like what are your recommendations if you're choosing people to be in a collaboration with? Like what is your checklist for the people that you want to work with, and what are the red flags for definitely not?
First and foremost, the most important thing is that you must have a prior relationship with someone. It doesn't have to be an in-person one, or it doesn't have to be extensive or long, but writing cold, I've had at least 10 failed collaborations, and all of those failed because those were people who were acquaintances or sort of cold emailed me, and I didn't really have a relationship with them. So I think that in itself is the single most important element. And then if that element is satisfied, if you have someone who you know and you trust and you're friends with, I think then sort of setting up a project that's small scale, that is manageable. Like I probably wouldn't start out the gate with a full novel. Maybe I would start with a short story or a novella and get the process down.
Mm. Yeah, no, that works. So you also, with this American Demon Hunters series, you've worked with a whole load of different people and ended up with a whole load of different voices. You know, what possessed you to do that approach with your own world, and how have you felt like it's gone?
Yeah, I was originally just going to say, well, demons possess me too. But then I was like, no, and then I just said it anyways. I think I have to remind myself that this series isn't even 6 months old, or it might be 6 months old. It's still an experiment. I decided I wanted to incorporate other voices, and I couldn't map it out to the finest detail. So now I'm sort of in the second phase of it, where I'm getting some feedback, some great feedback that you gave me about ways that I can kind of smooth the edges a little bit. Part of it is it's not coming from the same head. So yes, the novellas are going to have variations in them. And I tried to structure the story beats in a way that at least the format would be consistent, like a television show. If you watch The X-Files, every episode might be written by 10 people or 10 different people, but the pace and the storyline of each episode is pretty consistent. So that's what I was striving for. So for this, you know, I'm still really early, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly where I want to take this and what I want to do with it. But the reason for it was, again, to sort of stretch myself a little bit and push past the comfort zone and try something different.
Mm. And how are your own writing projects done just as your pure voice working while you're doing all these collaborations? Like, are you maintaining your own voice? Are you being influenced by other voices? And, you know, how is that? And how do you even balance your time?
I hear voices all the time, so that works out well. I think it improves my writing. I really do. Every time I collaborate with someone, I learn a ton of stuff, and then I get to incorporate that into my own style. So I think we all have our own voice, which is distinctly our own, and it's something that comes from within. But there's sort of the mechanics, the language, and the craft part of it that I learn so much from other people. And as far as the balance goes, my work style is one where I can't. It's hard for me to do short, intense bursts. Like this is really a challenge for me this week. What I like to do is do little pieces over a longer period of time, and then I stack those up so that I'm sort of changing what I'm working on throughout the day. So Zach and I, for example, are very different in this way. He likes to work on one project at a time, finish it, move on to the next one.
Me too.
Yeah. So I like to have, and not a lot, but I would say 2 to 4 at the most. If I have 2 to 4 projects, and they don't have to be writing projects, like they could be writing songs for my band, or they could be working on a video project or a writing project. But if I have 2 to 4 of those going, I feel like I don't ever get bogged down by any one. So for me, it kind of helps to have some variation.
Okay. So what are your plans for collaborations in a business sense? Because, you know, you have worked with so many different people now. Are you turning into James Patterson with all his, you know, collaborations? Do you see your niche, I guess, as a publisher being a collaboration guru machine?
I hadn't planned that. I'm very impulsive. I have ADD. I just jump into things without thinking too much about them. And my plan was not to become a collaborator. I'm an INTJ. I'm one of like the 2% of the population in that regards on the personality spectrum, which basically means I'm a super lone wolf and I don't like working with other people at all. And people go, but you're the guy doing all these collaborations. So it's sort of evolved from that. And I think it's sort of given me a path now that I hadn't anticipated. And people started calling me the collaborator before I was. And I was like, okay, maybe there's something there. So that's kind of where I'm headed. And the start of that is going to be Molten Universe Media, which is the small press that Zach and I are starting. And I think that's kind of putting me into phase 2 of my indie author career. And with Author Earnings Report coming out and what you've been talking about on your podcast, I think there are a whole crop of indie authors who got into the game, you know, around the beginning, the 09, 010, 2011, that are now sort of hitting that second phase. And I kind of feel like I'm on the cusp of that.
Oh, it's interesting you say that, because I feel that too. Like the movement is maturing. And I've, you know, some of the others who've, I don't know what order we're going to play this in, but, you know, Lindsay and Zach, we've been talking about the people that you've never heard of who are doing really well. And the number of authors who are making a living, you know, on the fringe of what publishing would be. But what are you excited about in terms of this next phase of the indie author movement?
I think what I'm really excited about is that I think, and of course predictions are always the worst thing to do, but I think it's going to go into the same, it's going to follow the same path that it's done in the other mediums. So, you know, I'm a big music fan. So independent music, independent film, don't have a stigma. In fact, people rally around that. They love the indie movement in music and in film. And I think we're sort of flipping that paradigm now for publishing. So for me, it's really exciting to see people realize that they don't need someone to tell them what's good. Like they can decide for themselves. And that's kind of what the indie mindset's all about. Like you don't need a gatekeeper. You don't need someone to tell you this is what you should be reading because someone in a high rise has said, this is what you should be reading.
And like you said about music, you know, we're writing this thing together, but last night you and Zach went to a metal concert and me and Lindsay were like, yeah, we won't skip that. And that's the thing. I think it's really important. And like you say, it's been accepted in music. It's been accepted in film. And maybe that is the next stage. I think the other shift is that, like you said, you guys are starting a small press. I've started a small press. I think you're going to publish other people because you collaborate more, whereas I'm not really intending to do that. But that's kind of the next question, because there's a lot of back end pain with working with people in terms of the money and all of that type of thing. So, you know, have you had to develop business systems, become more organized, you know, all of that type of thing?
I'm naturally a fairly organized person. I'm really good with time management. I'm really good with project management. So those systems are easy enough. You can take them from your personal life. You can take them from your business life and sort of apply them. I think the legal aspects around this is where I really need to be cautious and informed. And so I've hired a tax person. I'm getting more into sort of more formal contracts. Anytime there is a sharing of the IP, that's where it gets you know, more complicated. I don't know exactly what James Patterson's model is, but I'm guessing many of his writers are sort of work for hire. And in which case it's a simple transaction. It's like a newspaper journalist. you pay someone to write whatever piece that they're writing, and then you as the author, publisher, have 100% of the IP. So it really depends on where that is, but I'm sort of poised to step into that in a more formal way as we move forward.
Because the more people you work with, the more complicated it can potentially
That's
get.
Correct.
Yeah. So how do you handle, because you're a pretty laid back guy, which is great. A lot of people listening might not be. And I think I don't think I would ever be in charge of a collaboration, like in terms of I couldn't do this, you know, and try and edit everyone and that type of thing. But how do you handle retaining someone's unique voice while trying to present a quality product that everyone can enjoy?
I honestly don't know. That's the key to it all, isn't it? I mean, when you're talking about a co-writing collaboration, the ability to preserve what's unique about your voice, but also at the same time create a cohesive experience for the reader. That's what we're all chasing. So I just do my best and I learn every time. And especially with doing the American Demon Hunters novellas, and we talked a little bit about doing small scale projects, it's given me the opportunity to practice some of this without a major commitment. So, if we're talking a 10 or 15,000 word story, and I do that with 4 or 5 or 6 different people, every time I get better at that. Mm. It doesn't mean that there aren't conflicts and there aren't some hurt feelings. And there were, there were hurt feelings in some of the novellas, and there were some things I did that I know that the writers weren't too crazy about. But I'm pretty responsive too, and I listen to people, and if it makes sense, I change it. But at the same time, I'm the publisher of record, and so I will have the last say. But I like to think I'm fairly reasonable if it comes down to, different elements of the writing that gets changed or revised.
Mm. And what's the best sort of personality mix, do you think, with a group of collaborators?
Well, you can't have too many alpha dogs. clearly, it's probably, if I would go on a limb and without any scientific evidence, I would say it's probably more personality based than work style based. I think knowing who the people are and what they bring as people will trump sort of the work style. And, you don't necessarily want all of the same type of people who work all the same way, but you don't want them to be radically different either, or else you won't get anything done. It's a balance. And I think a lot of that comes through in the relationship piece. I am generally pretty laid back. And then there are times where I'm like, no, this is just how it's going to be. And I can do that. And so maybe if you are the person who is thinking of organizing this, maybe that's one way you can approach it, is to be very flexible, but also know that there's moments where you are just going to have to say, this is how it's going to be. And everyone has to be okay with that.
Mm, yeah, fair enough. And then just on the book marketing. So, one of the things that's being talked about a lot right now with Chris Fox's book on the six-figure author and the Amazon algorithms. And, we've talked about this book, American Demon Hunters, Sacrifice. And in how between the four of us, our also bots could be quite messed up. As especially Lindsay particularly doesn't write demon stuff usually. She has some other things. How does the marketing, do you think, work for all the co-writing stuff in terms of making the algorithms happy? And, how have you done all the different marketing with different people?
I feel like I'm in a transitional moment, and I will credit Chris Fox for that, for better or worse. I would say even as late as last year or the year before, the general mindset was you had a book launch and you went far and wide with the message. You just blasted.
You just told everyone.
You told everyone, and you played the percentages, and that was sort of the game. And I think reading Chris Fox's stuff and understanding that the way the Amazon algorithm works, that hurts you. And I started my list in 2009 or 2010, and like you, I know I have this wide range of readers, people who are into horror, dark fantasy, other authors. And so blasting out to my list a new book is going to hurt me in a way. So I'm in this transitional moment now where I'm putting a lot of time into my list and down to individual people, asking them for their favorite genres, ranking their genres. And then what I'm starting to do now is tailor the broadcast to those specific people. And I haven't seen this firsthand yet, but I trust Chris knows what he's talking about. You don't need a ton of those on a launch. You know, maybe it's as few as 100. If you have 100 hardcore post-apoc readers and you send them to your book launch on day one, that alone might be enough to really set the algorithm going in the right direction.
Mm. Yeah, it's almost like you want to do it secretly and then tell your list later. Because, yes, of course, you want to tell the wider list, but maybe you want to do that a bit later, which is, you know, can be, you know, is a different thing, like you said, than what we've been talking about. And it's very hard with an established name.
Yes.
So that is interesting. So you also have a new podcast, The Petal to the Metal, which is an awesome name for a podcast. I mean, you have a number of podcasts. So for people listening, what are your different shows and where can they find them?
Yeah, the two that are running right now are The Intronaut at theintronaut.com, which is a podcast for introverts, which is more self-reflective. It's just me. It's sometimes I have an occasional guest and it's short form. Just about my experience as an introvert. And then the new one that you mentioned, which started in January of 2017 with Rachel Herron, my good buddy in Oakland, not in San Francisco. She's a romance writer. And The Petal to the Metal, which is at thepetaltothemetal.com, is a podcast about transitioning from day job to dream job. And we're both writers, so we talk about writing as a full-time author, but it really would apply to anyone any creatives who want to make that transition.
Mm. And then where can people find you and all your fiction? And also if people are interested in co-writing?
Yeah, all the fiction is at jthorn.net, and that'll take you to anything you need. And if you go to jthorn.net/co-writing, there's going to be information there if you're interested in possibly a co-writing experience. And I'm going to be developing out some face-to-face writer retreat type of programs. And so if you want to be notified and know how that's developing, just head there and I'll contact you.
Fantastic. Because, yeah, I think that's becoming much bigger in the author niche. So it's great that you're leading that charge, because I'm certainly not going to do it.
Well, I have the battle scars and I know what to avoid. So if I can help other people out, then that'll be great.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for your time, Jay.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the interviews with Lindsay, Jay and Zach today. For three introverts, I think we did quite well not to kill each other in the week in New Orleans. And we're pleased with the book. So I hope you will check it out. And remember, you can get all those super bonuses in launch week at jfpenn.com/sacrifice book, or just look up American Demon Hunters Sacrifice on Amazon. Okay, so next week I've got an interview with J. Daniel Sawyer, who is an authority on all things audio and one of the smartest people I know. And he's just updated his book, Making Tracks. So we'll be talking about audiobook production, distribution, sales, and marketing. So I will see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes, available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.